I'm starting an evening series called Living Out Our Faith. I wanted to call it Living Large or Living Loud, but the problem is, and some of you will. So I don't want to call it that necessarily. So let's rather go with, I'm calling it Living Out Our Faith. It's one thing to believe and to build up your faith. It's quite another to have to exercise it. And the bottom line is that the biggest attraction for the gospel we have is actually you. Now, is that good news? Or some of you are like, oh no, where are we going from here? But that's the reality. The best advert we have. You see, I don't know why, but I'm finding articles written by atheists all the time these days. And it would almost seem to me that they're carrying a deep disillusionment because they can't see God. Now, what they don't realize is that the Bible says no one can see God. It's not just them. We couldn't either. But once God opened our hearts and we could see him, the best way we demonstrate him is to demonstrate the change he's made in our lives. So, in other words, we make the gospel attractive by the way we choose to live. In the same way that Jesus made the Father attractive by the way he lived. Correct? I mean, he even said, if we've seen him, we've seen the Father. So much of Christianity could be so empowered if we just lived well. And also, we chose that song, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, because some people are just downright miserable. Isn't it true? That's why certain people, I can't say how are you. I don't have the hours in the day to listen to what comes back. Especially when it's long and it's the 18th time that week that we've heard the same flipping story. You see, if you create your own bad story, you live in the thing. But if you choose to live well, if you choose to live out your faith, you just put at a different level immediately. And it becomes attractive to the world around you. So, from the book of Hebrews, I want to look at a couple of things. I'm going to start in chapter 12, go back to 11, obviously, and then go to 12. And I want to start looking along the lines of how do we live well? How do we live ethically in this day and age? How do we live an attractive Christian walk? So Hebrews chapter 11, please, if you're there. Now, this morning I realized I did a double preach. There were hundreds and hundreds of people here. And I realized I never opened a Bible or read one verse. So I hope some of them come back next week. I think that's the first sermon in 23 or 24 years that I never read a single verse, and I meant to read a whole portion of Acts 1 and completely forgot in both meetings. So what we might do, Wayne, is I might preach now, just do Hebrews Acts 1, 1 to 9, and cut and paste it into this morning's preach. So whoever moans, I say, well, go look at the video. I just got to change my shirt. Or just do it from here. So I'll make up for it tonight. Verse 39 of chapter 11 gives us a bit of a context because we're talking about all these men of the Old Covenant, Old Testament, who lived so well, men and women, who lived so well before the Lord. And verse 39 says, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. And that better was Jesus. Verse 12, chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, two verses tonight. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Those are two of the most beautiful verses in the Bible. I've got 5 pages of notes on those two verses, and I'm very confident we're not going to get there tonight, but we have time. I am intrigued by the amount of control God has over our lives if we give it to him. I want to tell you, it is easy to be scared for your own future. I had a prophetic word just now that says, you know, the lion, the enemy roars like a, he prowls like a roaring lion seeking whom to devour, and he makes his noise and we get scared and we want to flee. And a word came that says, instead of fleeing, we should look back on those situations and speak the word of the Lord to it. Instead of running, go back and speak the word of the Lord to it. It's easy to fear. I had some irrational fears over the last weeks. I had a little incident where, while we were away in White River, as some of you know, Hensia choked to death. She got an embolism. It wasn't the cancer that killed her. It was a blood clot by the cancer that got up her left lung, because her right lung was over. It was closed. And it blocked her, and she couldn't breathe, and she held me. And her last words were, her eyes went massive. She said, "Greg, I can't breathe." And her eyes rolled back. And she passed out, and I raced her to Lingsfield Clinic. And she was, her heart had stopped by the time, it took 3 minutes. Her heart was stopped by the time we got there. They put those machines on, and she lay there on the floor outside. As they put those machines and took her inside, 15 minutes, I resuscitated her, which didn't work. And I remember her lying there blue, and it was horrible, you know. Then my dad goes and gets colon cancer after having had throat cancer. Then I'm in the game. I'm in, I don't know when it was, just before Christmas or something. And I've got full of snot and I'm and all this. And I wake up at 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the morning and I can't breathe. But can't breathe at all. So when I try, I'm going, and it took me over a minute on my watch. And I started to black out. And all I could think about was, what happens if my boys wake up and they see me exactly like they saw Mom? I had this incredible fear, what's going to happen? And it took about 60 seconds. Luke heard me choking, my middle boy. And he's always been the one given over to a bit of anxiety. And he charged to me. I'm standing by the bathroom. I can hardly hold. He says, "Daddy, are you okay? Daddy, are you okay?" I can't speak to him. He starts crying. He goes hysterical. Levi wakes up. David sleeps through anything. Levi wakes up. And I'm literally, I couldn't, it was the most scary thing. It happened a second time a few nights later. I went to the Medicross. They gave some other story. The Mediclinic there in Nelspruit. It's happened about six times till now. What they think it is a lung and bronchial tube spasm caused by either a virus or whatever. I don't know. And so I'm always coughing and spluttering. And it happened two nights ago again. I couldn't breathe for like 20 seconds. So what it does is it completely shuts up. And when it shuts up, all you want to do is breathe, because you can't. So I go to my doctor since I was in standard four. You know what his bright advice was? Don't breathe. So I said to him, "Now, how does that help?" He says to me, "Don't breathe. And it'll calm down." So when it happened the other day, it all blocks up. And I thought, I'm not going to breathe. But I can't anyway. But I'm not going to try. Lo and behold, it opened after about 5-10 seconds. So apparently that's the answer. But the point is, I start to fear. Because it happened to my wife, my father, and all I'm thinking is my kids. I'm thinking, I'm not scared of me. I'm thinking, what happens to my kids? And what I started to do was look at it and say, "Lord, what do I do with this?" He said, "You can't," it's just like Graham's word to me, "you can't give in to your fear. You have to speak to it." So I said, "No, I will not. For the God has raised me to give these boys an inheritance, and I'm going to do it. Not for the next 2 weeks till I die. Longer." Just trusting God for that kind of a future. Where in spite of, I said, "No, Lord, this isn't good enough." And start to speak. And you can't go on the evidence of what's been. How many of you say, "Oh, Lord, show me my future. Lord, if God had shown me where I am now 4 years ago, I would have had the crappiest, excuse my language, 4 years in my life." Because how do you predict when you know what's coming? And then he says, "Run with perseverance the race marked out for you." Now, what happens if the race he's marked out for you doesn't suit you? Now what? Because I'm telling you, some of you listening or watching or in this room tonight, some of you serve God because it works for you. What's going to happen when it doesn't? What's going to happen when it no longer works for you? Where God's will and yours differ. And I've heard pastors preach from the front. If you're in the will of God, it goes well for you. Tell that to Jesus. Tell that to Stephen, to Paul, to every disciple who followed Jesus, who died a horrible death. You go as a charismatic and tell them, just keep tithing. Keep tithing. Keep doing everything, and God's going to bless every day of your life. I want to tell you, Jesus, who endured the cross, did it for the joy set before him because he ran his race a certain way. And I want to talk to you a little bit over the next weeks about how to run that race. How to live out your faith in a way that's real, even when it hurts. Because I want to tell you, if the race has been marked out for you, you have no choice but to obey your king. No choice. Because if you go off that road outside of the one marked out for you, I promise you it's going to be worse. I just don't know how. Chapter 12 begins to talk about practical theology. How do you live in this world when God is fashioning you for a race and he prepares you to run it? How do you endure? You're going to see just now, endure hardship, all that business. What we're going to discover, endure discipline, endure hardship, God prepares you for something without always telling you what he's preparing you for. Because if he tells you, you sometimes want to short circuit the process, don't we? He won't let you. So he finishes forming you to prepare you for what lies ahead. And I could bore you to tears to talk about my own devotions as I'm going through Genesis again, beginning of the new year, and I'm finding God showing me things about the patriarchs I'd never seen before. How Abraham, the man of faith, has to bury his wife. Isaac, the man of faith, has to bury his wife. I read this morning how Jacob, the man of faith, has to bury his wife, Rachel. I thought, Lord, if this is such a non-sexist society, why can't the wife bury the husband? Why must he suffer? Just being honest. I mean, I read it there. I'm like, I've never seen that before. Hang on. It's not fair. If he's so favored, let him die in his sleep. Let her bury, you know. And it didn't work that way. And they each had to walk through their stuff to do the will of God. And I want to tell you that sometimes in this race marked out for you, there are things you have to do, roads you have to walk, you alone, and you've got to figure out, Lord, how am I going to do this? How am I going to live out my faith when the road doesn't suit me and the road marked out for me is painful? How am I going to do this? Number one, Jesus sets our example. Jesus sets our example, as we read over there. This passage begins talking about what Jesus has done for us. It's a great moving passage of the New Testament, this Hebrews 12 verses 1 and 2. Because it points to the cross. Because the cross is the stimulus that points us towards serious endeavor when it comes to the things of God. When you want to live out your faith, you've got to look to the cross. Every now and then I watch that movie, The Passion of the Christ, again. And I'm reminded of Jesus' whole earthly ministry. The cross was in front of him. He did everything for the sake of that cross. He knew that's where he was going. And you and I, what we do is we mark it by each other. Isn't that so unfair? So-and-so gets this, so-and-so gets that. I spoke to my mom just now on the phone, asking how my dad is, because he's still coming out of high care, so I couldn't phone him. So I phoned my mom. And she says, you know your father, my love. She says, he's got everyone in the hospital loving him and wanting to do everything for him. I said, I know, Mom. I told everyone in church this morning, my dad is favored. He's just favored. And I said, and it's interesting. He's the second son. He's got an older brother. Between me and my brother's the favored one. It's like, I said this morning, I wish it would just fall on me. But it skipped to him. My mom burst out laughing. I said, Mom, who owns a game reserve? Who has to suffer for Jesus Monday to Friday in the Sabi Sands? Who then, Friday afternoon till Sunday afternoon, wakes up to the most amazing vista in his 12,000 square meter property in White River that's to die for? With two perfect little girls, one in matric, one in standard 8, I said to my mom, you know, this is not fair because, you know, my dad's the favored one, the second born. My brother got it. It's just, and my mom just said, don't worry, love. I'm sure there's a special place for you in heaven because you're serving Jesus. I said, I don't think so. But anyway, be that as it may. The point is this. You can't compare to your next door neighbor. You can't compare to your family member, someone else. Why does it go so well for them? It doesn't work out for me. Just walk your race. Yours. Not the next person's. Because they come across yours, but every person has a race marked out for them. So the first thing I want to do, we might not get past here, is I want to look at the word we, W-E, we. Can you bring that camera close, Wayne? So in my own Bible, like really close, Like closer than that. This is as far as it gets. Oh. Okay. You see those little purple marks? Can you? No. What's wrong with you? Everyone else can. Do you see them? If you can't, honestly, it's your problem. There's 7 purple marks in my Bible. 7. Well, they're pink, but on there they look purple. We, us, an hour is found 7 times in 2 verses. And the word I isn't found once. Wow. Not once. I want to deal with the we versus the I in terms of running the race. Because we all have to run this race. So I'll read it again on the highlights. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Not one eye. Where am I going with this? We links the writer, we don't know who it is, of Hebrews, to the readers. He is saying that he is as much a competitor in the race as they are. He's as much caught up in the contest as they are. And the entire context of these verses is Jesus and his own people, purchased by his blood. And we're going to see that living out our faith cannot be done or achieved alone. It was never meant to be. When I prayed just now, when we were singing that song about surrender, and I said, Lord, do a work within us, I'm so concerned about those who still come to our church with the I mentality. I am not impressed that our meetings are full in the mornings. I am impressed when people lose the I and become part of the we, become part of the us. Individualism, listen to me, individualism is probably the primary cause of backsliding and ineffectiveness. Individualism is probably the primary cause of backsliding and ineffectiveness. Why? Because you can drift in your heart or in your actions and no one else will know it, see it, or challenge it until it's too late. Yeah? I've got lots of people that are my friends on Facebook. And so what my phone does, or Facebook does, it tells me when it's someone's birthday. So I get lots of them. But of those I know, I always give only 2 standard responses. So if it's you, you know you're going to get it. It's either happy birthday, bro, or happy birthday, young lady. Yeah, some of you had those. That's all I ever send. So I sent it to someone today who's in this church, who sends a message back and says, thank you for remembering me. A lady, thank you for remembering me. Things haven't been doing so great. Her husband left her in November. I found out today. How did that work? How did that work? Now, I know them. I lent them my car once and all sorts, and they were with me in the West Rand Church and all sorts of things when we planted that side. But the point is, when you isolate yourself, you're in trouble. And no one sees it, recognizes it, or can take corrective action until it's too late. Now what? God puts us into community. And the Bible says he has a people for himself, not a ragtag bunch of lone rangers. But most churches allow the lone ranger mentality. Clock in, clock out, do what you want, as long as you make us look successful by your numbers. It's actually not helpful as a church continues to grow and to grow unless we build community. And you can't force community. But if people are not involved in the community of the church, serving in some capacity, growing relationships in some capacity, if they're not doing that, there's no way we can know how they're doing. If they just breeze in and they just breeze out. The Bible says God puts the lonely into families. Now, I know, I'm telling you, I've got a family. If one's missing from the table, I know. Yeah? We actually went to the shops the other day, and Levi's so quiet. As we're driving off, Vanessa came with us. She says, where's Levi? Do we leave him behind? Because my boys are always so noisy. One's quiet. Your heart stops for a minute. What if you did leave him behind? But when you stop and count them, they're all there. And what we need to know is that all of us belong to a sense of family. Listen to the language. A bride, a people, a temple, an army, a light, a city, a body. No individuals. A sense of belonging. And I want to tell you that your individual expression finds its place in the togetherness of us. And you cannot live effectively for Christ outside of us, the body of Christ. Are you all right? The writer identifies himself for the readers as also running the race because we can't expect others to be and do what we aren't being and we aren't doing. That would be hypocrisy. So the writer to the Hebrews, who many assume is Paul, but we don't know. The writer to the Hebrews says, let us run the race. Let us run with perseverance. He includes himself in it. I want to tell you, in the church today, there is way, way, way too much hypocrisy. Are you okay? This writer, this leader, is moved to gentleness and compassion because he works through the same stuff they are. Let us run the race marked out for us. He's encouraging them to do what he has done. I tell our leaders all the time, please lead people from where they are, not from where you are. Don't put expectations. I, as a father, cannot expect from my children now what I would do now. I've got to remember back to when I was their age. What was it like for me? One of my biggest adjustments I've had to do with David right now is to remember my son's nearly 14. I'm not treating him like a kid still. And it dawned on me during November or somewhere, just before December, I was thinking about it. Why are him and I clashing a little bit again? And I started to work it through, and the Lord started to remind me what I was like when I was 13 or 14. And he says, your boy is, treat him like that. I tell you, you can't believe the difference in our relationship already. Simply because I began to treat him from where he's at, not from where I'm at. And the writer to the book of Hebrews, who's obviously a leader in the church, is speaking to the people and he's saying, listen, I run a race and I'm aware of my weaknesses, so I need to treat you accordingly. There is a gentleness and there's a compassion. You see, he's drawing his example from Jesus in Hebrews 9 and Hebrews 10, where we're told that Jesus identifies with us as a great high priest because he's been where we are. He has endured the stuff that we have to endure. That's why when we pray to him and we cry and we're feeling hopeless, he is a high priest who does identify with us because he's been there. He just didn't sin. But he's walked that road. And when you and I say, oh Lord, no one loves me, he says, hello. Now Lord, that person spoke about me. He's like, listen, the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees had whole meetings discussing me. You're not alone. Yeah, but I got rejected. Really? All my disciples left me. Yeah, but I don't even know if God remembers me. I on the cross said, my Father, why have you forsaken? Is there anything else you've gone through? I haven't. Lord, I can't find a girlfriend. He's like, well, I never had one either. Sorry. So Jesus identified with those he ministered to. And he expects us to identify with those we minister to. And when I prepared this preach on Friday morning, I wrote you, I just think of Luke calling me on tears. So Thursday night, it's the grade 2 meet and greet, because all my boys are at a new school now. They're all at Redham at 3 different campuses, junior primary, senior primary, high school. So now I've got to learn all 3 things, the 3 different everythings. And even tomorrow, I have to phone people from Redham this afternoon before I get my boys ready for school, because there's this kit and that kit and this kit and that kit, and I don't know what they must wear tomorrow. So I had to phone and say, what do my boys wear tomorrow? No, this one must wear this one must wear this, and this one must wear this. Thank you. Put the phone down. Then I got phoned them back. Sorry, what time does school start? Because I don't know. Anyway, so Thursday night, I'm at this event. It's a parents meet and greet. And while I'm there, my heart is very burdened. And so my son phones me, Luke, and he's in tears. He's crying. And the reason he's crying is because they did a bit of a night walk thing, early evening. And as they do, some of the boys and girls in the group start to talk about the fact that they're missing their mommies. And it comes down to Luke like a ton of bricks. He doesn't have a mommy. loses the plot, phones me, and I'm just about to walk in. Vanessa's come with me. We're just about to walk into that meeting to find out how the school works for the grade twos. And I've got to sit outside for 15 minutes taking a crying child who's on camp, grade six, and say, boy, I can't take you home. Daddy, please, crying, come fetch me. Daddy, I miss you so much. Daddy, you've got to come fetch me. I can't, boy. This, and I just said to him, this is one of those moments where you've got to dig deep. There's a lot of people there. I will see you tomorrow. But my boy, dig deep, pray. Can I pray with you? You've got to, my boy. I can't come fetch you somewhere in Brits. I can't. At the exact same time, my mom phones to say my dad has just come out of a, my sister phones to say my dad's just, or he has not yet come out. They're just going to go in and look for the septicemia to find what's wrong. They wheeled him in and started operating at 3 o'clock. This is just before 6. No news. He's still in theater 3 hours later. We don't know how he's going to do. And I remembered back immediately when that was happening and Luke's crying and I'm feeling his pain and I'm like, boy, immediately out of flashback. Because as I said, my dad was busy flipping, fighting for his life. While that's happening, I had immediate flashback to my first few nights in the army. And how, when I went into the army, a couple of days later was my birthday in January, and I opened a card from my dad. He said, open this when you get there. And I opened this card and my dad said, my boy, as you read this right now, small card, he said, keep this card in your pocket and know that every single time you look at it, I'm praying for you. Greg, my heart is broken for you. I wish as your father I could come in your place and I wish I could go to the army for you. But son, I can't. This is your road to walk. But I will be praying for you. And just know, I'm always a phone call away. Love, Dad. And I kept that thing in my pocket in the Gideon's Bible the whole year. Even though after a few nights I got over that sense of loneliness. And in that moment, I realized how my dad must have felt. Thinking of me as I'm thinking about Luke. And I'm busy preparing this preach where I realize when the writer of the Hebrews says, walk that race marked out for you, I too am walking this with you. It's a realization that Jesus, who walked his road, still walks ours with us and still lives to intercede for us. He's still with us every second of every day and says to you, I identify with you and I'll be there with you and I'll do it with you. But let's walk together. Now compare that to the fake, the hype, the error, the wrong motives, the self-promotion, the bad examples in the modern Western church that the heart of God must be so grieved. Still today, when I meet pastors who aren't in our circles and I greet them and say, how are you? Their first question, how many people in your church? Well, it's like asking me how much hair on your head. I mean, what does that achieve? It's ego. The writer wants the audience to identify with his way of life, not his pulpit persona. And so you're going to be called by God to speak to people about a Jesus who has carried you through your stuff. Not a Jesus who spared you so that others can go through stuff and then you go and tell them, don't worry, it's going to be okay. They say, how do you know? I'm telling you now, my response to people who've lost loved ones is very different to what it was 5 months ago. Very different. That sense of loneliness, that sense of pain you carry, it's different now. And I do think it's one thing to lose a spouse at 70, 80. It's another when you're young, you've got three little boys. It's another issue. I also have a huge amount of respect now for single parents because I've been one for nearly 5 months. And I've got three boys with my gene pool. You know how hard it is. And I've got a church to lead, and I've got an eldership that needs my time and attention. And I've got three boys clamoring, and I've got a new school, and I've got different grades. And I don't even know what time they start school tomorrow morning. Went to my mom-in-law. Is there stuff for the lunch boxes? Yes, good. Trying to find my way. I identify with you. And when I tell you I've got a road marked out for me, so have you. And the same him who looks after me will look after you, but we will do it together. And you draw strength from me, and I'll draw strength from you because that's how it's supposed to be. There's an incredible strength to God's people being one people, one body. And real momentum in the life of the church is created by God's people pursuing him together. That's why I prayed that thing. And it's so hard for me not to get frustrated with sometimes the slapchat Christians I find around me who just want. But they're not doing the together thing. It's very hard. And I couldn't make prayer meeting, you know, only that I leave three kids behind. I've got to go and beg the in-laws to look after three kids, that I can be unprayed and seek God with you. What's your thing again? Oh, yeah, you know, traffic. You know, I also came in the traffic. I also got stuck. I also had to leave early. I also, but no shame, you get the Oscar this year for hard life. I'm telling you, God's called us to something together. A road marked out for us where we have to start to throw off a few things. We have to choose to live differently. So let me hurry. It's already 30 minutes. Lord, help me. You know, he's going to tell me to stop waffling. Think back to Acts 2 where the church is in one accord. Think what they devoted themselves to. You see, personal devotion can't be demanded from anyone. It has to be freely given from the heart in personal faith. You can't demand it. You know how many punks have said to me in the last little while, Greg, I just wanted you to keep me accountable. What does that mean in English? Do I phone you before the 8 o'clock, the 10 o'clock, or the 5 o'clock to ask if you're coming? I mean, what do I do? In between getting my life ready to be here, what do I phone? Hi, are you coming to church today, sweetie? No, sorry, Butch, I've got golf, but I'm with you. Greg, I live for the gospel. See you next month. Imagine a church environment where most, if not all the people, are wholeheartedly giving, fasting, praying, fellowshipping together. Imagine a church truly doing life together in the manifest presence of God. Imagine a whole church. You call a prayer meeting, we have to have some outside, some in that room, because we can't cope. Imagine the attractiveness, the energy, the power, the excitement, the life, the joy, the unity. When the people of God just pull in together because we're running a race. Imagine. Now for a moment, and I have to do only point one, I knew. What a bother preparing. Now imagine for a moment the safety issue. Community protects the individual. It causes us to grow. It causes us to be stretched. It causes us to come out of ourselves, and it causes us to allow others in. It keeps us safe by keeping us accountable to and for each other. You see, when I grow in a relationship with someone, we're able together to walk this road. I'm telling you, it's my friends, most of whom are in this room right now, who carried me over the last 4 to 5 months. My friends who are here tonight, asking how I am, visiting, phoning, my boys. They even formed a group here on, what do you call it? WhatsApp, called Greg's Haze. It had a far more polite name. We called it Greg's, China's, and an Indian, because we included Nitesh. And someone decided we needed to be politically correct. I don't know who it was. It just became Papa G's Haze. But when we're with each other, we can walk a road together. You see, it helps us with our outside church commitments and priorities, because there's not enough time to do everything. And it's simply too easy to be waylaid or distracted by the demands the world tries to place on us. It's strange that it's when you commit to giving God more that the world also demands more. It's just a done. Yet there's a pace and a rhythm that God wants to lead us in that can refresh us and feed us with purpose and energy. And we have to find that pace and we have to find that rhythm together. It's with half embarrassment and half shame, I have to admit, I couldn't wait for school to start. Because I'm used to going on holiday where I split the responsibilities with Hens here and we can just take turns. So Kurt and Shannon came with me from Brakpan with their three kids. So it was like a whole party happening at my brother's house. Kurt gets up in the morning, puts his, is he, they're not here, hey? Kurt gets up, puts his running clothes, because I just be careful what I say now. He's from Brakpan. Kurt gets his running shoes on in the morning. And off he goes. He gets back, or sometimes Shannon goes in a little cycle. And off they go. And they come back and they pat themselves and they do their stuff. Then the one goes and does this and the other one goes and does that, because there's always one of them looking after the kids. I've got the three Garretts. They're different. And it's from the time I wake up. And you got to understand that from when Hensia died until tonight, Levi can't sleep without me. So he sleeps in my bed. Luke puts a mattress next to me. David's over it. He's next door and he's cool. I have had for 24 hours a day over December, those three rugrats right here. I couldn't even go to the toilet without them knocking. Some of you moms know what that's like. Knocking on the door. Dad, Dad. I said, if there's one time in my life that you leave me alone, it's when I close that toilet door. And my brother doesn't have a single key to a single lock to a single toilet in his house. How many times I'm sitting there, whoop, I just want to ask, get out. I'm trying to throw things in. Then when I do want to go out, no, you, Dad, we're missing you. I was so claustrophobic by the end of flipping December. When I waved my boys goodbye to camp, I promise you my tears were fake. That Wednesday morning, Luke and David off to camp, Levi off to school, I went like, wow. What am I trying to say? It's been so hectic. Honestly, people are, how was your December? Did you rest? Yes, I rested. I went into this. Me? I'm dead. I'm over. I start like, you can't wait. Yeah, I can start the new year. I'm ready to rumble. No. No. I hit this new year tired. I'm tired. I can't go away. I can't leave the kids. I can't go on a bike ride. I can't. I'm just not at that place. So what do I have to do? I mean, they start at school tomorrow morning. I've got to make sure. Once they're at school, great. I've got to find the pace again. And I've got to find the rhythm again that God wants me to live in the demands of a world that's very needy. And the moment I do it as me and not as us, it's going to kill me. As it would kill you. Some of you got one kid. Oh, God, I don't know if I can cope. Try three. On your own, for the first time, different demands, new school, new this, never mind, my own elders are all clamoring for time with me, people in the church all want appointments, people in other churches, I now get a call from that Paul Collinson, that greaser you saw, who's coming to preach here next week, you know, big Collinson, the bearded dragon, texts me this morning, hey mate, I'm arriving on Tuesday, but he's coming next week, no mate, this week, so I said, hang on, when I finish my day, I'm going to phone you. So just before church night, I phoned him. I said, hey, mate. He said, hey, mate. I said, get him on the phone. When are you coming? No, mate. I'm arriving this Tuesday. What? Yeah, I'm staying with you for like 2 weeks, mate. What? Yeah, and I'm bringing another guy with me. What? Yeah, see you Tuesday. Anyone want to help with meals? I love it. Now suddenly, all the dynamics changed again. And I have to find this pace and this rhythm. But God's put me with us. And we've got to find how we do this. What it does, it involves a realignment and refocusing. Now the problem is, I'm almost done. You can't realign and you can't refocus when your head's down and you're just running the treadmill. That's why you need those around you who come alongside you and give the help that's required. That's why I said, let's talk the safety issue. It's those who come, hey, just do this, or just do this. Hey, what about this? Have you thought about this? Lifting your head for you when you can't do it yourself. It's a pity that most of us only reevaluate in December when the pressure's off for some of us. We all need people that know us well, who are allowed to see inside, speak into our lives where course corrections are necessary. Our friends keep us safe. Our friends keep us effective. First point, I thought I'd get through two, I only got through one, is we. The we and not the I. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off the sin, everything that hinders, the sin that so easily entangles, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scoring its shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I want to ask you, and I wish everyone who's listening to this or watching it would do the same. Make a life decision to be part of us and not I. To be part of our, to be part of we and not me. Stand with me, please.